Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Welcome to another edition where we're going to go down memory lane today and revisit some very historical moments in gospel music. First off, to introduce this guy, all you'd have to say were the opening lines of this song, the chorus. What a day that will be when my Jesus I will see. The songwriter is on the line with us today, and he's got a long history in gospel music. His name is Jim Hill, and Jim, welcome.
Well, Daniel, it's good to talk to you.
Man, you have such a long history, I don't even know where to start, except for maybe at the beginning. You want to talk about your childhood some? Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Ohio, in a little town on the Ohio River called Portsmouth. From there, I just got introduced to gospel music through our church, and I was at the time studying for some opera music and an audition with the Conservatory of Music, Cincinnati. And I just happened to get in a gospel quartet, and that's pretty much how it started. Long story.
Was the first quartet you sang in one that you organized, or was it someone else's?
I did organize the Golden Keys Quartet. I pick my heavy burden up, and with him by my side, I climb the hill of Calvary.
Some glad morning fair, I'll lose all earthly care
and join the one.
And join the one I love so dearly. Love, I know it will not be long. I hear the glorious song
at home in heaven.
At home in heaven.
The Golden Keys stay around in gospel music?
I formed the group in 1952, and we sang up to about 62, about 10 years.
Okay.
And that's when the Stamps called me, and or J.D. called to go with the Stamps, and that was a fine group for a part-time group quartet. That was a good group.
And Danny Gaither was in that lineup, right?
Right, right. I was writing Bill Gaither. That's when he was teaching in high school over in Indiana. Mm. And he was writing music. He loved Southern gospel. And he would bring me, this is before Danny joined us, he would bring me some of his music he was writing, wanting to get it out. Mm. So we were doing some of Bill's songs, and then in the meantime, his brother Danny graduated from Ball State University, and we got him a job with one of the high schools there in Portsmouth, and he moved up and traveled with us on the weekend.
Since I crossed over.
started writing more music with us, and I could have gone into partnership with Bill at that time, but I didn't want to take anybody on. Yeah. And you know the rest of the story.
Sure, absolutely.
Bill went his way, and I went mine. But we have stayed friends for many, many years.
Absolutely.
Have you had a Gethsemane? Have you prayed the night through? I've been to Calvary. I can say I've seen the Lord. I've been to Calvary through the witness of his word. Each day at Calvary, what a thrill of love divine, just to think, just to feel, just to know that this Savior is mine.
They were singing songs of praise, amazing grace, how sweet the sound, when the old account was settled and my name was written down. Oh, I was saying yes to Jesus when the fire fell that day, and God heard me and he saved me in the old fashioned way.
Well, I have good news to bring, and that is why I sing. All my joys with you I'll share. Oh, I'm gonna take a trip in the old gospel ship and go sailing through the air.
Oh.
Days of loneliness, nights of weariness, need a rest for my poor soul. Someday I shall dwell in a land where all is happiness and joy forevermore.
And one of these days I'm gonna sit right down by the beautiful river. One of these days I'm gonna live with my Lord forever and ever. I'll have a new mind, I'll have a new life, I'll never grow weary. Trials are past, the victory at last. One of these days, I now.
My love, my life, my love, I pledge thee. I love thee, Lord. I love thee, Lord. More.
Some people would say that a fellow from the North could not sing gospel music. You just had to be from the South. Well, here's somebody that proved everybody wrong. He not only is a great tenor singer, not only does he have a good group surrounding him, but he also wrote one of your most favorite songs of all times. What a day that will be. Ladies and gentlemen, make welcome to the stage none other than Jim Hill and the Golden Keys.
then I went from there. J.D. Sumner called me. The Blackwoods had just bought the Stamps Music Company in Dallas, and he needed somebody to form the group and get it started. And then he was going to eventually join the Stamps. So I moved to Memphis and started the quartet, the Stamps Quartet, up in Memphis, Tennessee. And then from there, we moved our offices to Nashville. And then it goes on with the Stamps for several years. And Ovie Lister called me at the time when the Stamps were going to go with Elvis. And he needed a lead singer, and of course I sang first tenor in the Stamps, and always wanted to sing with Rosie Roselle.
Sure.
And we teamed up. I decided to go with Ovie and the Stamps, or the Statesman, beg pardon. And it kind of got off to a start that way, and been a lot of years, but it wouldn't take nothing for my journey.
Go back for a minute. You said something that was interesting to me. When J.D. was with the Blackwoods, and the Blackwoods bought the Stamps name?
Right, right.
And
the Blackwoods bought the Stamps Music Company in Dallas.
Okay.
That was one of the old gospel music convention book companies, and they bought it. And then they started putting in and doing sheet music there of Southern gospel, and That's how I started. However, J.D. did join us.
Yeah.
After I got the group started, Roger McDuff sang lead in the early group I formed. Terry Blackwood was my baritone, and Big John Hall.
Yeah.
Was the bass singer, and Smiling Joe Roper was the piano player.
Sorrow, trouble and strife used to be my company. Heartaches blues in the night never used to let me be. I used to sit around and pine all day. Nothing never seemed to come my way. Then I opened up my eyes and saw the light. Now I'm living on the sunny side.
Well, I'm living on the sunny side. No sorrow, sunny side, no more darkness, no night.
My way is brighter, my road is clear. The battle's over, the enemy's near.
Now I know there's nothing else to fear. I'm living on the sunny side. I'm living on the sunny side. No sorrow, no trouble, no strife. I'm living on the sunny side. No more darkness, no night.
My way is brighter, my road is clear. The battle's over, the end is near.
Now I know there's nothing else to fear. I'm living on the sunny side, oh yes. Living on the sunny side, oh yes. Living on the sunny, sunny side.
Inheriting the old purple, we called it old purple bus,
yeah,
from the Blackwood Brothers, which they had worn out, we would have done pretty well, and it wouldn't have been so hard getting started. But we broke down so many times that when we were to sing, why we had a date maybe in Dayton, Ohio, or maybe we were coming into Louisville, Kentucky, and at the auditorium, all the groups were standing outside of the curb watching for us to come in, wondering if we was going to make it. I had a lot of stories, stories. But I enjoyed the Stamps and getting it started. And then J.D. joined us about 2 years later.
Was it known? Was it out in the open that he would eventually join you? Or was that?
No. Yeah. That wasn't known.
Ah.
But what happened, he was partners with the Blackwood Brothers, which included the Stamps Music Company, and he traded partnerships. He sold his partnership back to the Blackwood Brothers, and if they would give him the Stamps Quartet and the name.
Hmm.
And that's when J.D. started with us.
Well, and some of the names that you were telling me about that you performed with in the Stamps, I mean, I think most of those people gathered together in some later, in some homecoming situations where you all were reunited. And that must have been just an incredible to have. I think McDuff was there and Terry Blackwood and, of course, JD and some of those early videos. Did you get together and talk about those old days?
Oh, my, yes. Anytime we would get together, we would, when we had a spare time, we would find ourselves talking about something that happened on the road and the funny parts of the traveling and the good times. And there's always hard times come along, but most of it was good times, and it never got old.
I've got to walk that lonesome road.
Storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of a storm, there's a golden sky.
And then you went with the Statesmen, is that right?
That's right.
Great order. And then at what year did you leave the Stamps?
Oh, I I think it was around 1966. He joined the Statesman at that time.
Oh, hear the good news that Jesus is passing, wanting to save the sinner.
And then about 1972.
Okay. At that point, what did you do?
I was getting a little burnt out traveling, and right about that time, things were down a little bit in the quartet field, and it was getting pretty much of a struggle. And I had a daughter that was 16, and it wouldn't be long till she would want to go to college, and I just felt that I needed to get out of the traveling and move back north. And I was offered a job at that time as an account executive for a shoe company,
mm-hmm.
And I ended up as national sales manager. And then I was directing choir for First Church of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I had moved at that time to Dayton, and I was at the First Church of God in Middletown.
Mm.
And built a very nice choir. And then I traveled some, it wasn't like quartet traveling, but I also had to travel with the sales business. But it was a wonderful, wonderful setup, and I was still in gospel music. And then I after a few years of directing choir, I left the shoe business, and at that time I just was ready to retire, and started doing concert work as a soloist.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going around now telling my story of the gospel singing and my career, and having 50 anniversary concerts of What a Day That Will Be.
Yeah.
And now actually it's been 52 years now since I wrote it.
Wow.
And when I wrote it, I was just happy to get it on sheet music. That was a big thing back then.
Yeah.
And Ben Spear was responsible for that. When Spear family would come to town, while we were generally singing on the program with them and in the Golden Keys.
Yeah.
And they liked the song, and especially Pop Spear. He would cry every time he sang it. So I got a call from Ben one day, wanted to sign a contract with me, and it's been Ben and I all the way, and the song is now around the world.
Mm. And would that be like 1956 when it was written?
It was written in 56, right.
Yeah. So was that just before you formed the Keys, or
I was
after?
I was in the Keys at that time.
Okay.
And yeah. I was writing a few songs for the quartet, and this song just is one of those things that come with you at that moment when you didn't expect it, and wrote the song within about 15 minutes.
Hmm.
But with the situation that was happening in my life, I had been married long, and my mother-in-law was stricken with paralysis due to a stroke.
Mm.
And she was actually like a baby. She had to be waited on for 3 years.
Mm.
And she was a very wonderful Christian lady. My father-in-law was a Baptist minister.
Mm.
And I couldn't understand why she would have to lay that way. 3 years she laid that way. And I was in my backyard one morning, and I just kind of looked like at the sky and praying, and God, why should this happen? Got in my house, and I was there by myself at that time, and there was an envelope there on the table and a pen laying right to it, like somebody had set it there for some reason. And those words began to come to me. There'll be no sorrow there, no more burdens to bear. I'm going to write that down. Wrote it down, added a chorus to it, had a song.
There'll be no sorrow there, no more burdens to bear, no more sickness, no more pain, no more parting.
God was instrumental in the song being written, and when I see the effect it has now on people, especially people that needing comfort for death in the family or terminal illness, whatever, they seem some kind of lift when they sing that song. So I had to step back by it being out in the world now. I just had to step back and join everybody in singing it, and I don't even realize it's my song.
And countless thousands have sung it and performed it and recorded it. Have you been able to think back to all who have recorded that song or that you've heard sing the song? And have you been able to pinpoint maybe a favorite arrangement or a favorite vocalist that you've heard sing it?
Well, it's been so many sing it. I think the Harmony Quartet, was one of the first to record it. Then Spears recorded it, and it's been done by hundreds of groups. But I think of all the people that sing it, and I've heard it, I think what got to me one day was we were singing in a small church, or in the early days after the song been out a while, and they were having a kind of a Sunday afternoon sing. And a little girl from the orphanage was going to sing a solo. She walked up, had a little homemade dress on, no home, living with the orphanage. She began to sing that song. And I have never been thrilled so much in my life as to see and hear that little orphan girl sing that song. It's been sung by many, many others, but that song then had such a meaning to it that I'll never forget it.
And as on a personal note, my great-grandmother just several years ago, at the age of 94, and let me tell you, Jim, 94, she was still out there in her 90s doing yard work. She had like 11 acres of land, and she had two riding lawnmower tractors, and she'd get on one and cut the grass about half of the yard until it got tired, and then she'd get on the second one. But she had a fall, and there were some complications, and eventually she became very weak and was put into went to the hospital for a few weeks. And in her final days there in the hospital, laying in the bed with family around, she was almost kind of coming and going out of a coma state, and she came out. And one of the last memories, my family, you know, with generations there around her bed, she started singing the chorus of your song. And that's all she could remember. She couldn't remember the verses, but she would just sing it over and over, and everybody joined in with her. And that's just a precious memory that we have.
Oh, my goodness. I've heard that so many times.
Yeah.
Glenn Payne with the Cathedrals, on his deathbed, they were standing around singing to him. And he just of a sudden raised up and started singing "What a Day That Will Be."
Hmm.
So that does happen many times. And I got a phone call here, I guess, a couple, 3 years ago from California. I didn't know the gentleman, but he'd gotten my phone number from some minister. And he was a Christian, and I guess it was a preacher coming there or a singer or something. And he fell in love with the song. And he had a college friend that had two children. He's only in his 30s, and he was dying of some illness, and he wasn't a Christian. And on his deathbed, he asked him to lean down. He had something to tell him, and he started telling him, "I hear singing." And he started quoting some of those words.
Wow.
So the angels must have been there somewhere. And he said the thrilling part of it and the mystery of it was he wasn't a Christian, never went to church, and said, "I don't even know whether he's ever heard that song." So when God gives you something, It can get so big you just don't realize it.
Sure.
And now that it's the song's out and working for His kingdom, well, it just you're speechless to try to say anything about it.
That's probably not your only song. I imagine you have others that that are in your library or your collection. You find that to be true, that whenever as other songwriters have told me, that when it comes as that song you told me, it happened this way, you just feel like you just got to write it down. It's no stopping it. You can't hardly suppress it. It just comes out.
That's exactly right. And a lot of songs I've written, but they didn't do as well. But when God gives you a song, you can just rest assured that it'll do pretty well.
Sure.
So it makes a difference. When head writes it, it's a song, but that's all it ever will be.
Yeah.
But when the heart writes it, why, it'll last forever.
Are you still writing? You find yourself writing songs these days?
Well, not lately. I'm strictly doing concert work. And I've talked to other writers. There comes a place in your life where you just don't seem to be able to put it together. Mm. So I haven't written for some time now. And Bill Gaither and I get together a lot. We live pretty close together. And he said the same thing. I know here just a while back we were together, and he said, "You know, Jim," he said, "I haven't written for quite a while." He said, I'm working on some things. I think lately he's had a couple of things coming out with the vocal band. And he's got a real team there with Gloria Gaither, because she's the greatest lyric writer I've ever heard.
Well, you've seen so many changes in your career, and you talked about when your daughter turned 16 and you felt the need to be at home. And I've heard you talk about Bill and Gloria. I've heard them talk about how important home life is. When you look at the 50s and 60s and into the 70s when you were traveling, and you sort of look, you compare that with the artists traveling today, do you think as family men and women, they have it easier today with some more, I guess, maybe more modern conveniences than you had it back then?
Well, so far as the working conditions, it's much, much better. And also the booking of the agents is a lifesaver to most of them. I know when traveling with the early groups, it started out in a car, and then five of you would be crowded up in a car, and you'd have big 33 and a third albums in the trunk.
Yeah.
And have a sound system somewhere, you know, two mics and one speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And hope the car would get started every day.
Sure.
And that's pretty much the change. Now you've got the beautiful $1 million buses, and it's a lot easier traveling, but you never get used to being away from home. Mm-hmm. And a person has to want to do it, because it isn't that, even with all the nice things we have now, it isn't that easy to be on the road. And you have to travel almost every night to really make the go and the expenses.
Sure.
But it's something that you, if you're in the singing business, you want to sing, and it's nobody can talk you out of it. And then there comes a day when you're ready to rest. And that's pretty much what I'm doing now.
Those refuse to sing who never knew our God, but children of the heavenly King, but children of the heavenly King may speak their joys abroad, may speak their joys abroad.
When you were traveling and working all those dates, and you would come to a venue where you were on a program with someone else, and I'm sure that happened quite a bit, think back and give me some highlights. Who were some of the artists or some of the quartets or groups that you were most looking forward to as the bus was going down the road to the next date, and you knew you were going to be performing alongside this person or that group? Who was sort of the life of the party that you look forward to hanging out with, or who brought the best cake with them?
I always enjoyed the Florida Boys. I had a very, very good rapport with them, and and they're just down to earth and a lot of fun. And then, of course, the Blackwoods, they were home guys to us. And and the Statesman was my idols when I was traveling with the Stamps, and always loved being with them, the Goodmans and the Spear family. And there were just so many good ones, especially Oak Ridge Boys. We were very close and worked a lot together. And the Oak Ridge were just wonderful guys. They really were. And that pretty much covers it. But, those were my favorites, let's say.
Who did you look up to as far as your range of voice, maybe either as a kid or once you got into the business? Some people might want to try to emulate them a little bit or try to hope one day to be as good as that person is. Did you have someone like that?
Well, I knew there was so many out there that I didn't have the capability of maybe going as high or whatever. I never in studying voice, I was a no-no to do falsetto.
Sure.
And a lot of southern singing was falsetto, and I was the Hovey always said I was the first Yankee that was ever hired in a southern quartet full time.
Yeah.
And I was a little different from the rest. I enjoyed, as far as trying to emulate, it was pretty hard to do. I had to kind of set my own pace. But I always enjoyed Bill Shaw. Mm-hmm. And vocally, I think Bill really did it right. As an inspirational singing tenor was Rosie Roselle. I don't think anybody ever could raise a crowd and sing in the spirit like he did. Mm. But those were pretty much my favorites.
Some of the early quartets get criticized for you know, and I think probably in that day, in that setting, you probably really got criticized, but being too entertaining and not enough ministry or not enough, solid doctrinal foundation behind it. As a songwriter, speak to the importance of doctrine and speak to the importance of really saying something with your songs, you know, as opposed to just always putting out fluff and stuff that just feels good, I guess.
Well, that's true. There's been there's so many different types of gospel singing. And the quartets, especially back years ago, the songs that had the rhythm and the big high notes on the end, and got the people excited. But the song that really, really gets to the heart and down to it are songs like "Oh, What a Savior," and songs like that. There are some that will raise up an audience spiritually, and there's others that just kindly excite.
Sure.
You know, and I think there's just so many good songs that's been shelved today because of the difference in tempo and the instrumental parts of it. There's a need for it, but some music that's written today just doesn't seem to fit in with what I enjoy when it comes to the heart. And we need all kinds of music. What will reach people? Some one song may not reach one and one another, but it all has its place. But I prefer the songs that you can get up there and sing. And I'll meet you in the morning.
Oh yeah.
If we never meet again, precious memories.
Yep.
And "Oh, How I Love Jesus" is a chorus.
Sure.
But that doesn't get old-fashioned. To some it might, but they're just so good, they last a long time.
And you're right. I mean, there are groups out there today that's bringing those old songs back to kids, and they think, hey, this is a new song. And but really, it's been out for so long, they've just repackaged it, or they've presented it in a new way to get the attention of the kids. But when you go back in your friend Bill Gaither says it many times, we don't sing these songs because they're old and these songs haven't lasted. because they're old, but because they're good.
That's right. That's exactly right. Mercy Me, I think you've heard of them, the contemporary group.
Yeah.
I believe he's the one that sang I Can Only Imagine.
Right.
I got a call the other day, U2 on the computer,
uh-huh,
and Mercy Me are doing What a Day That Will Be. And in their own arrangement,
sure,
didn't change the words or anything. And I understand from the drummer Mercy Me that they're planning a hymn album. And I imagine that'll be on the hymn album. I don't know, but it just shows that they are coming back to that. And I know Mike Speck is arranging a lot of the old hymns now, and that are reaching the younger group, Larry Goss. So it's coming around. It's songs that have lasted because they are good, but they reach the ear of a younger group if it's done in their style. So it's coming to that point now.
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and our guest today is Jim Hill. He is, of course, the songwriter of the great song, What a Day That Will Be. And he's been so kind to take time, and we're reliving some memories of his back with the Golden Keys and into this Stamps Quartet and the Statesmen. And I could talk to you all day about these old days. They were incredible. And you were a part of the, tell me the story that you told me on the phone the other day about the very first National Quartet Convention in 1957, Memphis, Tennessee, at Ellis Auditorium. You were there, right?
Right, right. We were there with the Golden Keys Quartet. And as the groups would come to town, Statesman Blackwoods, they were the favorites around here in Southern Ohio, and in Spear Family. And they would always like to sing with some of the part-time groups. We always warmed up for them. We knew the promoter, and we would sing. And so they invited us to the quartet convention, and I think they did a CD at that time. It was just a tape of Take Me Out to the Program or something like Take Me Out to the Program. And we were at the first convention, and James Blackwood was doing the MC work, and he was going to introduce the Golden Keys Quartet. And I'll never forget, he said, now, ladies and gentlemen, coming from Portsmouth, Ohio, to sing for you is Jim Hall and the Golden Keys Quartet. Give him a hand. Jim Hall.
Yeah.
Jim
right.
Hall was a singer. He sang solos, and I think he wrote some music. And I got the name that night.
Boy, that's a memory. Back when, and I've heard stories that Elvis would come, and because of his popularity, he wouldn't always, make a big scene. He would sneak in backstage and watch from the wings behind the curtain. But he loved it.
He loved gospel music. Southern gospel was his heart. And I know when I was traveling with the Stamps and the Statesmen, he would be out. They would call him, let him know where we were going to be. We always sang in Long Beach, California, which wasn't too far from Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And Elvis would come down in his two limousines with his crew and big white Mercedes Benz, and we'd bring him up the back elevator, the service elevator, and he would come backstage and stayed back there, and the audience didn't even know he was there. But he would sit along the side of the stage and just shout out to the to us when we were singing, amen, and all of that.
Sure.
But that's where his heart was.
Yeah.
And his ambition was to someday have a road tour of gospel music, but he didn't live to see it. And he was a nice guy. He really, really was easy to get acquainted with. But they couldn't let the audience know he was back there because it might disturb the program. But it's amazing how he felt about the old song.
Yeah.
Just tears would come to his eyes even. But it was good times and so many stories to tell.
There's no other name so sweet as Jesus. No one ever cares so much for me as to share.
Our guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends. Jim, tell me about your family. How many years you've been married?
I've been married 58 years.
Yeah.
58 years. And with the same wife.
Yeah.
So that tells a lot about it, doesn't it?
Sure.
And Ruth is her name.
Ruth.
And she's one of those people that whatever you feel that you're led to do, go do it. And naturally, we lived alone a lot of nights, but her and my daughter, I have one daughter, but they enjoyed seeing me doing what I felt led to do and doing it for the Lord. And Susan now has two children, and little Missy and Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And my granddaughter is taking studies at Nashville at the Art Institute of Tennessee.
Oh.
So we're hoping that something comes out of that. But I had a good family, and they stuck by me and supported me all the way.
Yeah, it's got to be a good feeling for them when they hear your song come or sing it in church and reach over to their neighbor and say, hey, my grandpa wrote that.
Yeah, that's right. We were in service in Dayton not too long ago. My little grandson, he had a hymnal there in his hand, and the church, pretty big church. And we were just singing, you know, and little Jimmy was hunting page 264 or something in the hymn book. And then when he found it, he punched my wife and pointed to my name. Yeah.
Well,
and that's pretty exciting to a kid.
Sure. Well, it's not every day you meet a hymn writer. I mean, usually think you have to be 6 feet under before you can get in the hymn book.
But, yeah, that's right. That's one thing about my concerts. You know, people hear the author of What a Day That Will Be is coming, and so many come up and said, well, we thought you were dead.
Yeah, really? And in a weird, backward sort of way, that's a compliment, Jim.
That really is.
but you and Bill and, I mean, can you imagine if you two had paired up together, the power of the songwriting that you two could have come up with? I mean, wow, that would have been fun days. But you two remain friends. And listen, we're going to stay in contact with you and keep us up to date of what's going on. If people want to see about bringing you to their church, do you have a telephone number or a website or somewhere you could send them?
I have a post office box. It's Jim Hill, post office box 320, Middletown, Middletown, Ohio, 45044.
And that would be the way to get in contact with Jim Hill. Tell you what, I'll put that address on our website. If you'll go to danielbritt.com, you can get that address. And I imagine that would be an inspirational evening to bring Jim in and hear these stories live in your church and in the songs as well. And Jim, you've got some projects out too, right?
Right. Now I'm, of course, I'm carrying most all of the homecoming videos. And I carry two of my latest CDs. One is What a Day That Will Be. And it also has about six or eight, I forget how many, of my other songs. And then another CD is called Heart and Soul of Jim Hill. And on that is some of the songs, some of my favorite Southern gospel songs, and both of them are doing well.
Well, Jim, thanks for your time today, and we so appreciate you giving us a little bit of your heart today and the memories, and you take care, and we'll be sure to keep thinking about you every time we sing that song.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure, and God bless you. And
you too, and I'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.